And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. But we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
It was 1776 when the founders signed the writ of independence from the Brits. It was revolution.
We've got a very exciting show tonight. I've got two of the absolute leading experts in the world on Agenda 21, and they will be talking to us tonight about the issue of the different cogs and the councils of government which are taking over our country now, and explain that whole process. Before we start with that, let me just tell you very briefly what Agenda 21 is for the listeners that have not been to our earlier programs. Agenda 21 is the name of the white paper written after the Rio Earth Summit in 1992. That Earth Summit was billed as a conference on the global environmental issues facing mankind and a blueprint for the 21st century. In reality, it was a blueprint for the future of mankind where our Constitution, national sovereignty, and unalienable rights are eliminated and replaced by a Marxist world government controlled by a powerful elite of international financial oligarchs. Under Agenda 21, many of man's activities are listed as unsustainable and targeted for elimination by the year 2030. Number one, all private property ownership and rights are targeted for elimination. All forms of crop irrigation, pesticides, and commercial fertilizers, except when they're approved for big agribusiness, like Monsanto, ADM, and other companies that are approved for agricultural production by the government. Number three, livestock production and most meat consumption will be eliminated. We'll be living in a vegetarian world. Privately owned vehicles and personal travel will be eliminated. Burning of fossil fuels for energy production will be eliminated. Single-family homes and individual residences will be eliminated. We'll be living in stack and pack housing. Most forms of mineral extraction and timber harvesting will be eliminated and tightly controlled by a UN world government. And dams, ski lodges, different resort communities will be eliminated. And the final thing that's probably the most important, the human population will be reduced to fewer than a billion people to be a sustainable world. So with that said, I would like to introduce my guest for tonight's program. Michael Shaw is an attorney and a CPA from Southern California. He's been one of the leaders of the battle against Agenda 21 in Southern California. He has worked tirelessly to try to slow down and reverse the One Bay Area plan for the San Francisco Bay Area under a COG, which is a council of government. And then Michael Kaufman, who was one of the very leaders of this whole program. Michael appeared before the U.S. Senate in 1994 and with Kay Bailey Hutchison presented the wildlands map to the U.S. Senate, and through their efforts they got the Wildlands Project and the Sustainability Treaty stopped dead in its tracks at a vote of 98-2. Since then, our government, including our presidents, and I say virtually every one of our presidents, has been on board with the idea of implementing sustainable development goals through cabinet-level agencies and through administrative decisions for the last 20 years. And as a result, we have now many of the programs that, even though they weren't approved by the Senate, they weren't approved as a treaty, we now have many of those things in place. And so with that said, I would like to introduce my guests, and I guess I will refer to Mike Kaufman and Michael Shaw. That way we know which one I'm speaking to. But, Mike, I would like to have you kind of talk about your early efforts against Agenda 21 and a little bit more about your background.
Well, let me just explain a little bit where I'm coming from and how I got into this, and I think it will be helpful for the listening audience. I was leading a multi-million dollar research effort for the paper industry back in the 1990s on acid rain and global climate change. I have a PhD in that area. And I kept coming across this stuff about sustainability and even heard the words Agenda 21, although they didn't mean anything to me at that time. And I got very suspicious and really just did a segue and started to study what was going on and went into a state of shock as I realized this was a effort to create a world government where you and I are nothing but serfs in a plantation with overlords over us. And I came to know this as Agenda 21, as Michael Shaw will be able to explain as well. And it was basically created through, well, it goes back in the 1970s. I'm not going to go back that far, but let's just go back in the 1990s. There's an organization called the IUCN, the International Union for Conservation of Nature. And this is a United Nations organization, or affiliated organization, in which you have both environmental organizations and federal agencies of different nations meeting behind closed doors to discuss how they can implement the concept of sustainability on the world. And it's, again, behind closed doors. Understand that. It's done in secret. And the thing is that the process of this was that they were able to create a situation where to the average American, all this concept about sustainable development and so forth sounded wonderful, and it sounded like we need to do this by all means. It was coming from all directions in our society, both from the federal government, from environmental organizations, and from others that were planted in various locations. And everybody accepted it. It sounded wonderful. It really did. I mean, if you just listen to what they're saying, it sounds wonderful. However, it was designed basically to fool us, to trick us, as it were, into accepting this so that they could put the leash around our necks and put the chokehold on every American citizen. And it worked. It worked very well. And now we have, as Dan said, we have agencies and so forth that are working independently with no congressional oversight to implement this agenda. And it really is a very dangerous thing. We have accepted here in the United States under something called Sustainable America, and it's divided into seven different units of different activities around the country. And we're going to be talking about some of those here tonight as to how they're being implemented, with nobody really understanding how.
Good, Mike. Thank you for that. And with that said, I'd like to turn over the microphone to Michael Shaw. And maybe, Michael, if you would talk about the programs that you've been involved in and some of the things you've done in the Santa Cruz area, and talk about the ABAG and the COGS that are going on in Central California.
Well, I would start by saying that I would briefly summarize Agenda 21 as the action plan for world government. In other words, this is the plan to be adopted by all nations and all operations of government around the world, not just here, but around the world, to create a condition wherein we're left with everywhere becoming an outpost of a world government. And we see those steps being rapidly taken. Australia, for instance, is much advanced of even California in terms of implementing the Agenda 21 program and creating an outpost for world government there in the state of Queensland. But California isn't far behind. And, as you mentioned, I live in Santa Cruz, which is not in Southern California. It's really in Central California, right below, just west of Santa Clara County, and the Bay Area counties were down on the southern side of that. And Santa Cruz was sort of one of the five or six places around the country where Agenda 21 was seeded early, back in the early 90s. We were on pace with our political our operatives being very focused on implementing the programs of Agenda 21. Now, what happened was that a lot of action undertaken locally stalled them through much of the year 2000s. But today, they're kind of back on track. But what has happened is that the counties north of us, the Bay Area counties, nine Bay Area counties, have taken really a national lead in the implementation of Agenda 21. So what we see is an area, a landmass of 7.5 million people that are politically firmly committed to these ideas that lead to global governance and really portend for the end days of the American Republic. And
hey, Michael,
while,
with that, can you kind of lead into the role of NGOs and the UN-sanctioned bodies that have brought on the programs of Agenda 21 in the whole world, but especially in the United States?
Well, yes, there are NGOs, or so-called non-governmental organizations, are in general groups that have been sanctioned by the United Nations with that nomenclature for purposes of taking their position in helping to implement Agenda 21 here and everywhere. So you'll find that most of your environmental groups, the Nature Conservancy and World Wildlife Fund, are NGOs, meaning they're accredited by the UN for purposes of implementing and advancing Agenda 21 wherever it is they operate. So, but the NGOs are very widespread. There's about 10,000 NGOs operating in the United States today, and they include business activities. The Chamber of Commerce is an NGO. So whether you're talking about left-wing environmental groups or so-called right-wing business groups, you'll find that when you see the NGO designation attached to it, that their purpose is for the implementation of Agenda 21. So what we find across the country is that there are all kinds of sources that are working to advance this globalist cause. And if we stopped and looked at the political parties, both of them got their hands all over this stuff. Whether you're President Bush or President Obama or President Clinton, it's what drives your administration. And so we're a long ways down this road. And you say, well, if that was the case, I'd have heard about it. And my response to that is, where would you have heard it from? The newspapers? The newspapers aren't run by journalists anymore. The Bay Area has six or eight newspapers, all of which are owned by a hedge fund in Chicago. And they will not talk anything about Agenda 21 or COGS, which we're going to talk about, which is the mechanism for transforming local governments. Word of that never hits a newspaper. So the public is uninformed. In the Bay Area, very few people understand Agenda 21. Very few people have ever heard of a COG. In the Bay Area, the COG is called ABAG, the Association of Bay Area Governments. And today, in 2016, if we look at this globalist assault on the United States and on every other country, you have to recognize that they've moved very far down the path in the last 25 years. And if we don't catch on quick and terminate some of these globalist policies that have totally swallowed up our country's politics, and particularly withdraw our city compliance with the COG dictates, if we don't do something soon about these issues, it will become too late. Now, I may be jumping ahead of myself because I haven't explained what a COG is and how it operates. And
well, Michael, let's get into that globalism, because we will get into the COG thing, and I do want you to give a thorough explanation of that. But almost everybody in this country is being inundated on a daily, if not hourly, minute-by-minute basis on the importance of globalization. Well, that term, globalization, is nothing other than implementation of UN Agenda 21. Am I correct about that?
Well, I think I look at Agenda 21 as the action plan to get us to globalization. When we get to globalization, I think you can describe that in a lot of different ways. I know Pat Wood on a show of yours recently described that as technocracy, which fits into the picture very neatly. Other people call it communism, or other people call it fascist communism. But Agenda 21 is the action plan to cement the power in the hands of the globalist leaders so that the world population can be culled, and so that individual attitudes can be directed, and so that people become, you know, cogs in a government shtick. And we don't get there without Agenda 21, but Agenda 21 is not the end course.
Right, right. Now, Mike, would you, I know we had a little discussion about this on radio on Montana Today, and that was talking about the importance of recognizing what public-private partnerships are, excuse me, and the role of the foundation money that is going into all of the environmental groups. And these are tax-exempt foundations. So, in other words, the American taxpayers are paying for our own rope, because the tax-exempt groups are the ones that are funding all of this.
Yes, they are. In fact, the Grantmakers Association of America basically funds almost $500 million to $750 million a year in activism. Now, they don't give out usually these huge grants. They give out, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $50,000 to a small organization who are highly motivated to start to agitate. And the fact is that it's all been directed. If you think the environmental movement is a group of these people who are really fighting for the environment, and most of those are on the ground probably are. However, they're being directed, they're being funded by organizations like the Grantmakers Association, which is made up of many different powerful foundations that direct what they fund and therefore direct what actually happens. And it's been very effective, as Michael said. They thought this thing through from every direction, and it's been, as we've looked at it over the last 25, 30 years, they have been marching right along. And it's really at this point right now where it's, as Michael said, it's imminent. If we don't change it fast, we're going to get entrenched. And I want to mention one or two things about this whole thing with the COG system. The COG system is set up in a way that you have representatives from various local governments set up. That's usually the way. I'm sure there are exceptions. But the fact is that there is no accountability to the local population, almost none. And as a consequence, they can do pretty much whatever they want to, and you have no voice in it whatsoever as a private citizen. And that's a very, very important thing that people don't fully understand. They look at all this wow stuff that's being presented. You know, I'm looking at a program that we helped stop in Florida where it says that it will leverage resources, drive competitiveness and prosperity, greater opportunities, sustained job creation, open space, transportation options, environmental. Who would be against that? Who would possibly be against that? That's their advertising. And yet, that's just a smokescreen. And what we're seeing here is basically an effort to trick people, as I said before, trick people into thinking that this is wonderful, when in fact they're taking your basic rights away, systematically, one by one by one. And the most important of those is private property rights. You can't survive without private property rights. You cannot create wealth without private property rights. It's been demonstrated time and time again. And as a consequence, what they're doing is basically telling people what they can and cannot do with their private land, and they know the individual no longer has the ability to determine his own or her own destiny on that piece of property.
Well, Mike, and with that said, I'm going to include a quote here. This is from the policy statement by the United Nations Conference on Human Settlements, that was known as Habitat
Yes.
One, in Vancouver, B.C. in 1976. And this is listed as agenda item number 10. Land cannot be treated as an ordinary asset controlled by individuals and subject to the pressures and inefficiencies of the market. Private land ownership is also a principal instrument of accumulation and concentration of wealth, and therefore contributes to social injustice. If unchecked, it may become a major obstacle in the planning and implementation of development schemes. Okay, back to you.
Well, I think it's very key to understand what they're saying right there. One is that they basically plan to alter your whole life, everybody's life. Now, that can't be done on an individual basis, but on a massive basis, it basically defines what you can and cannot do. It's the local governments that enforce it. And one of the problems that we face with that is that by doing so, you're denied the right to be able to decide how to use your best your land that's best for your family, whether it's growing crops, building a auto shop, whatever the case might be. The fact is you're being told you can either do it or you cannot do it. And if you can do it, you're subject to tremendous limitations. I don't know if you're seeing that in the San Francisco Bay Area yet, Michael, but it's going to come if it's not already. And it's really a stunning thing when people all of a sudden wake up and realize that they don't have any control over their own destiny anymore. And this is happening not only in the Bay Area, it's happening all across this country, in small communities, large communities, doesn't matter what. You get a bunch of brain-dead bureaucrats and elected officials in positions that just think this is great stuff, probably because it gives them more power. And they take it and basically start to run over their own citizens. And that, I've seen that happen time and time again. So it is really important to understand that. And the other thing is that private property rights is what gives a nation its wealth. I mean, again, that's been demonstrated time and time again, and yet they're basically saying that it's wealth accumulation that causes all this social injustice and so forth. This is the United Nations saying this. That is causing all this social injustice and so forth, and it's not true. Now, there are cases where you have a dictator or something of that nature where that could be true, but in a representative government where the people are in control of the government, that will never happen. It won't happen because the people won't let it happen.
Well, Michael, with that segue, I think this is a perfect time for you to talk about how you got involved in this process and how your property in Santa Cruz, you've got, 80 acres right on the ocean, beautiful piece of property, and how that zoning on that property impacted you and how that really drew you into investigating more about the Agenda 21 program.
Well, I bought a piece of property well placed. It's not right on the ocean, but it's very close. And an interesting piece, interesting topography. Bought it in 1986. It was zoned for lots of things, and you know, I sought to do some things. And after 30 years, I can tell you that despite endless efforts, I've received no permit from the planning department for anything. And that's because, you know, the county just says, we don't want you to use that property. And that's a reflection of the New World Order, and I think draws right out of the quote that you read from the United Nations about government's intention, if the government supports the UN, and ours certainly does, the government's intention in regards to how they want to deal with property. I think it's clear. I remember my seventh grade teacher said, life in the early 21st century is going to be difficult because of globalist movements. And she said, where we'll focus is on the California coast.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, and as the California coast goes, so will the country. Well, I grew up and bought a piece along the California coast because I wanted to fight that battle. And I can tell you that the fight for private property interests along the California coast is dead. It's lost, at least for the time being. And what I've done with my property over 30 years, I've worked the green path. I have undertaken a weeding regime over the last 30 years with as many as 16 men a day, working 6 days a week, to put this in a natural condition with native plants, drawing upon native seed banks and causing those to crop up out of the ground. And today it's probably the most beautiful property I've ever seen. But even if you do what they say they are there to make sure happens, let's say you do it, that gets you no points. Their goal is control.
Yes. Can I interrupt just for a second, Michael, here? I think it's imperative for the listening audience to understand the goal is not to help the environment. The environment is just a surrogate issue to justify what they're doing. Their goal is to control. That's their whole goal. And if they, and the truth, especially true with global warming, and we're not going to get into that tonight, but nonetheless, the fact is that the environment they could care less about. It's control over you and I. And they're using the environment as the leverage in order to do that. I'm sorry for interrupting, Michael.
Well, no, thank you, because that's exactly the point I'm trying to make, and you just said it very efficiently. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Michael, would you talk about your experience with ABAG, about the lawsuit, and some of the things that have been going on with your fight against the Bay Area master plan, and talk about how the communities within the Bay Area are being literally absorbed by this COG, this Council of Government, that is eliminating all elected local governments.
Okay. Well, let's start at the beginning. What is a COG and where did it come from? A COG is a council of government. Most people have never heard of such a thing. Councils of government have been around for a long time. It was Dwight Eisenhower who created the councils of government, and he did it so that he could get around the constitutional limitations on federal powers and build the intrastate freeway system. So, seemingly, in the minds of most people, well, that was a good thing. We got our freeway system. But what we did in getting that freeway system is we changed our form of government. Now you jump forward and COGs would come into states one by one through federal agencies. They would come into each state when the state said, okay, we want to set up a COG system. It was in the 1970s that California set up its COG system. It was Ronald Reagan who brought them to California. Today every state has a COG system. And it covers easily 99% of land mass in America. So what a COG system is it takes a region. The Bay Area is a region. So their COG is called the Association of Bay Area Governments, or ABAG. So this COG, set up in the 70s, began scheming for its exercise of power. Nobody knew really it existed. Nobody monitored it. And what the COG was created from were picked, elected officials. So in ABAG, they've got 100 cities. They would pick people on each from various city councils to serve on ABAG if they believed in the globalist objectives of the COG system. So we have the worst of the worst politicians getting together regularly and planning out the creation of a regional government. Now, what has happened here in the last few years is that they've hit their real gliding stride. And what ABAG has done is it has announced a program called One Bay Area. 9 counties, 100 cities, 7.5 million people. It's going to be centrally run by this COG that nobody knows about, nobody elected. They certainly didn't elect these people as COG members. They elected them as city council members, but they're acting as COG members with this power that's just grabbed out of air. There's no basis for the power, either from the federal government's formation of it or from the local implementation of the program. Now, it's important to know everywhere has got a COG, and all the COGs are going to ultimately do the same thing. So it's important to see what goes on in the corners of the United States, down in southern Florida, or up here in the Bay Area in California, because those two programs look quite identical. The difference being that in the Bay Area, it's going down without a hitch. We don't have the kind of small counties that stood up against the southern Florida assault. These counties are all urbanized counties, and it's the center of Silicon Valley, and it just slid right through. There are very few politicians who are noting or objecting to the situation.
That's absolutely astounding. That's absolutely astounding that that's happened that easily, and that our government elected officials are not standing up for the people. Mike, this is a good point where we need to stop for a break. Kelby, would you like to take the break? And then when we get back, Mike, I'd like to have you talk about the Florida 750 plan.
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Kelby? Thank you, Kelby. Okay, Mike, Florida 750, would you like to talk about that?
Well, Florida 750 is apparently organized. I'm not as familiar as with the One Bay Area as Michael is, but as far as I can tell, everything about the 750 program overlaps that of the One Bay Area. In other words, the One Bay Area is a kind of a template. The 750 program basically is a offshoot of that is trying to take southeast Florida, the 7 counties in southeast Florida, and turn them into a regional government, much like Michael described earlier in the program. And what we're seeing is that it was very effective at, you know, wowing the local people and so forth. But the one difference that Michael mentioned, and I think it's a very key difference, and I don't know how to overcome it, is that the northern counties, the northern 4 counties of the east coast of Florida, or south of Florida, are agrarian, still agrarian. They still have a lot of agriculture and so forth. And there's one thing that I have noticed is that people that live off the land and live on the land basically have a much better appreciation of what reality is than those who live in big cities and so forth. And I'm not downplaying you if you live in a big city and so forth. I'm just saying that because they've come up with against the forces of nature, they have to overcome it and use it in a way that profits both them and nature itself. But anyway, they tumbled onto the fact. In fact, one of the counties had a commissioner that basically really tumbled onto what was happening very fast. And he basically really wrote hard on the whole process, wrote a 10-page letter explaining exactly what was going on. You have these public meetings and so forth, scoping meetings, in which it's basically organized right from the start. The conclusions are foregone, and they steer, and they have people at each table to make sure that the same result comes from each table. And eventually it comes to the point where they have the whole thing is designed basically to take your private property rights away, really. He was astonished when he wrote this letter at the fact that it was so blatant, and yet nobody saw it. Nobody saw it because it was all covered up with these platitudes like, you know, prosperity and leverage resource and comprehensive and greater opportunities, sustainable job creation, open space. If you go through your local documents where they're trying to do the same thing, you'll see the same exact words. Same exact words as a template from one to the other. And I think Michael is right. The One Bay Area probably is the master template for everything, because it's really designed to lock up an area. Now, One Bay Area thing was, what, passed 2 years ago, Michael? Year and a half ago?
Yeah, it's been a few years now.
Yeah, and they haven't come down and basically told everybody what they have to do and what they can't do and all the rest of it yet, but it's happening. It's happening as a process. And eventually, in 20 years or so, all of a sudden people will wake up and say, wait a minute, what's going on here? I don't have any control over my own life anymore. And that's what's happening in the 750 plan in Southeast Florida. And once people became energized, I was down twice helping, going to different cities in different counties, explaining what was going on. And they organized. It wasn't me. It was them. I mean, it was their effort. And they organized and basically fought back this monolith that was being created out of Dade County, which is Miami, in a way that really, really just took the four northern counties out of the whole process entirely. And they're still trying. I mean, they're still trying to bring those four counties back in. I don't think it's going to work because now the people are aware of it. And this is one of the things that I want to encourage you with. I've got several other examples, but we don't have time to get into them, of how citizens can stand up and basically block this. Now, if you're in a tremendous urban area like the Bay Area, I don't know. I mean, their political clout is just beyond belief. And Dade County tried to do that. And one of the things that really convinced a lot of people is that the head of this whole organization did a video, or was videotaped once, telling a local group of people who were supporting him exactly what was going on. And that video would blow your mind as to how he said, we're going to take over, people won't have the opportunity of deciding for themselves what to do. They won't have property rights. I mean, he goes right down the list and explains exactly what this whole plan of trying to do. You begin to see that. They said, that's enough of this. We're done. And they shut it out of their counties and basically are home free at this particular point in time. But this group is going to try to keep going and hammering, finding different ways of eroding local government to the point where they bring those seven counties back together again.
Yes, Mike, that's one thing that I've learned as a past county commissioner, is that they are relentless. They may not succeed this time, but they'll wait until they've got a new commission or they've got a new group of people, and they'll come right back. And
yes,
incidentally, to our listeners, please go to look up on Wikipedia or on the internet the term the Delphi technique.
Yes.
That is a technique that these trained facilitators have been using to build consensus in communities, and then basically what they're doing is they're allowing the local planning people and so forth to be sucked into this system where they are marginalized if they're against it and made less involved in the process. And they're given rewards if they do support the system. And it's straight out of the Rand Corporation in the mid-50s.
Mm-hmm.
It's been used in our universities as a training tool
to achieve consensus, and the original founder of this technique was Dr. Pavlov in Stalin's Russia back in the 1930s. So, with that said, Michael, did you want to kind of flesh out a little bit of how they're accomplishing the program of the One Bay Area in the San Francisco Bay Area?
Sure. Well, let me give a few details on what the One Plan Bay Area is. In short, it takes about 5% of the Bay Area and calls it priority development areas. This is where 80% of the next 40 years' growth is to be placed. So, and what these priority development areas become are transit centers. So there will be, it'll be housing without garages, but walkable to transit depots. They want to get everybody out of their car. That was mentioned earlier about Agenda 21. And so the way they're going to do it is to funnel $300 billion. I'll say that again, $300 billion to the infrastructure of the One Plan Bay Area. And the result of that will be the creation of these priority development areas and their transit centers where everybody is to live. These are the stacking facts. Single-family housing is, there's just to be no more. Essentially, no more development of single-family housing in the Bay Area is the plan. And you say, well, what cities are going to go along with that? Well, I can tell you every one of the 100 cities has gone along with it because they're all promised money for the implementation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the listener's money. That's not California's money. That's the listener's money. I don't care where you live, you're contributing to the One Bay Area program. At the end of a program like One Bay Area, in every metropolitan area of the United States, there won't be any money left.
Well, there isn't now. We're $20 trillion in the hole right now.
Well, they're playing on fumes, but they got big plans for the exhaustion of those fumes. And in the rural areas on the San Francisco Peninsula, for people who know the area, you know, it's a very rural place with beautiful homes. They've picked these priority conservation areas, PCAs, where there's to be no human involvement. Now, these areas already have homes in them. If you're living in a place that's been designated as a priority conservation area, you know, it's not a situation we want to be an heir to such property because the heat is going to become very hot. So that's sort of the framework of the planned Bay Area. It includes things like, for people who understand, know the Bay Area, there's a major artery, you know, regular road that goes from San Jose to San Francisco. It's called the El Camino. And they want to change that to the Grand Boulevard and prohibit any privately owned cars, public transportation only. They want to redevelop that whole strip with high rises and work plants, so you can walk to work or take public transportation to your job not far away. So it's the whole Agenda 21 idea of putting people into small, locked cubicles and to make the wildlands or the open space
the priority
where people can't go.
Yep.
Sure. You know,
and if I can interject right here, this is expensive stuff, folks. I mean, this is not cheap. You're talking about almost a half billion dollars.
A half trillion dollars. It's $300 billion, half trillion.
Just in the San Francisco Bay Area. And Harvard University did a study maybe 10 to 12 years ago where they looked at the cost of planning, and what they found, especially for San Francisco, already, I mean, this was before all this stuff really started, that the property values in San Francisco had gone up 600%, not because of intrinsic value of the land, but because of planning restrictions. Already it was happening back 10, 12 years ago before Harvard did this study. Another study back almost about the same length of time back in 2005. Well, at least 10 years ago, 2005. They found that 30% of all your home sales across the country, which means some are higher and some are lower, basically is because of planning. It has nothing to do with the intrinsic value whatsoever. Now, some planning, of course, is necessary. You need utilities, you need roads, you need all these other things as well. But we're talking about social engineering here. And it's very, very expensive. And when you start talking about leveraging prices up to 500 or 600% of what it would normally be, that really has an impact on your community as far as its economic viability. And I can't say enough how dangerous, I mean utterly dangerous, Agenda 21 is, the whole program of sustainability and so forth. It's like these knuckleheads just lost their minds and just started to plan willy-nilly. And the tragic thing about it is that most of the things that they do don't work. Don't work. They're grit and paper, but they don't work in actuality. So understand that we're, as Michael said, we're in a heap of trouble right now, and we've got to get this stopped.
Well, you know, really what this boils down to, our civilization under Agenda 21 will look very much like the movie The Hunger Games,
yeah,
where we'll have these mega cities, and everything will be a competition within those mega cities, and it'll be entertainment to be able to pull people, the few people that are out in the rural areas, in and make them compete for food. I mean, this is just insane, but that movie does a wonderful job, or those movies. Incidentally, I want to mention that I've got a young man by the name of Gerald Reed that contacted me from Miami-Dade County. And Gerald happens to be a young black man, and he wrote me because of the concern he has about Agenda 21 in the Brownsville section of Miami-Dade County. And I will just read a very quick quote from him out of the letter that he wrote to me. It says, Agenda 21 does not care about the color of your skin or your religion. Its purpose is to snuff out the freedom of the middle class. This is from a young black man from Brownsville in Miami-Dade County. This is happening everywhere, and he sent me a HUD document that shows the Brownsville Transit Village, and it talks about high-rise and maximum density housing.
Mm-hmm.
And Gerald's concern is that they're going to lose their ethnic, their neighborhoods, and they're going to lose them the same way that we are, through a forced segregation, or integration, I should say, a forced integration that the local residents may or may not want, because it may destroy the flavor of their local community. So, anyway, Mike, would you maybe talk a little bit more about that with the Florida 750 plan, how some of the local farmers and people are working with the urban areas to find out what they can do to work together?
Well, they actually haven't been working too much with the urban areas. For some reason, once you get into an urban area, people are numb. Even those that are not involved, they're numb to this whole thing. They're just blind to it. And you can't work with them because they don't believe it. It's not until you get into more rural areas that you begin to see how some of this stuff can really impact not only you, but everybody else in your region. And the key point, I think, is the fact, and Michael said it, these transit areas, building all these high rises around clusters and so forth around the station of a high-speed railroad or something of that nature. That's what they were planning for this 750 program down in Southeast Florida. And, of course, the people in the northern four counties could care less about that, because it really does not have any impact on their lives and how they make their livings and so forth. But that's what they were planning on doing, is gradually creeping in and building these high-rise buildings and moving people in, so that you have these population centers, and then starving basically the rural citizens off the land. I don't know how they plan to feed America, but it is bizarre what they're trying to do. I mean, it is so out in the left field that it's almost unbelievable that they can't see what they're doing. And maybe they can see what they're doing. Maybe this is deliberate. I don't know. I have no evidence that that is the case. But it's hard to believe that they can do the things that they're doing without understanding at least a little bit about the tragedy that they're starting to create.
Well, don't you think, Michael, that the leaders know exactly what they're doing and the drones that are implementing it have no idea what they're doing?
Yes, I do. I really do. I can't say that because I don't have any proof or any evidence of that. But at the same time, it's hard to deny what is happening and then not being able to see it. My book, Plundered, that I wrote a couple of years ago is still valid. It basically shows how people can be utterly deceived. I mean, it's just utterly deceived into believing things that just are not real. And that's what the progressive movement is doing in this country. And we have, as we're seeing in this current election, there's a lot of progressives out there that don't have a clue as to reality as to what really matters and what doesn't matter, what can really harm you and what is good for you. And it's just unfortunate because this has come through our educational process. I'm getting off track here, and I'll stop in just a moment. But we've been taught socialism now for at least 50 years, and these people, you know, the younger generations coming up, good people, don't get me wrong, but they don't have a clue as to what's going on, what our country was founded on, why property rights are so important, why control of local government, keeping government small is so critically important, all these other things that you and I take for granted, they don't know. And as far as they're concerned, it sounds stupid to them. And so it's very easy to deceive them. And I have some evidence and so forth of stuff back in the 1990s that suggested that the power players really knew this and they were going to take advantage of it, and they have.
Well, and with that said, guys, I have to tell you that keep in mind they plan on reducing the population of the world,
yes,
to under a billion people, and there's no better way to do that than to starve people.
Yes. In fact, the Global Biodiversity Assessment published by the United Nations actually implies that in its draft copy.
It's not an implication. It states that
yes,
if we remain industrial, we have to have a population of a billion or fewer. If we're peasants, we can have a population of 4 billion. So look to your future, if there is one,
yep,
as a happy peasant somewhere.
Yes.
Doing the deeds of the New World Order, the dirty deeds of the New World Order. Dan, before we're finished, I'd like to make mention of an organization called ICLEI.
Oh,
ICLEI,
yes,
is the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. It's based in Bonn, Germany. And you won't go to many COGs and not find that ICLEI is involved in creating the COGs plan. They've had a very important role with ABAG in creating the One Bay Area plan for the San Francisco Bay Area. Now, this is notwithstanding the fact that many, many cities across the country has kicked ICLEI out of their city. The ICLEI was working with a lot of city governments for globalization goals as well. And a whole rash of cities kicked them out. And what you find is that when the cities kick ICLEI out, ICLEI merely partners up with a COG,
mm-hmm,
and proceeds. They have the mechanism for creating what a commentator in the Bay Area said was a city state. In fact, the same commentator who spoke at the joint venture Silicon Valley conference, high-end conference meeting with several thousand people, said that the Bay Area will become the first city-state from America to join the United Nations. Only ICLEI says the future of the United Nations is the United League of Cities. The United Nations will change to a League of Cities, not of Nations. And this first fellow, his name was Paul Sappho, said, Francisco Bay Area will become a city-state in this United Nations program with little or no involvement with Sacramento and very little involvement with Washington. So this is the program, is to create these little outposts of world government and have them join up with the United Nations, not as their country or as a country, but as a city-state. And I think Americans have to think long and hard about that,
mm-hmm.
realize what that means. It's a complete abandonment of everything principled about America. The idea that your life is your life, not to be taken for a global objective.
Mm-hmm.
Your liberty is your liberty. You're to exercise your freedom in the way you choose. And your property is yours to use and enjoy. Agenda 21 is the antithesis of that. And these COGs spreading out and implementing Agenda 21 programs across the country is the bane of society. And unless we wake up, we're going to be swallowed by it.
Yes, and remember, these are non-representative governments where you have no voice whatsoever as a citizen.
Yeah, there's nothing I or Mike Kaufman or you, Dan, can do about the COG in your community because it's sanctioned by the federal government without any law, without any principle, sanctioned by the federal government and protected by the federal government.
Well, we can do something, guys, and what we're doing is things like this radio program right now. We need to awaken Americans to the knowledge that our country is being destroyed from within and without, and is being balkanized just like so much of the world. We are literally losing our national identity, and we need to stand up and let people know. And programs like this one tonight are the way that we will accomplish that.
You corrected me, and I stand corrected. Well said.
Well, gentlemen, I hate to do this, but we're nearing the end of the program, and I would like to have an opportunity for you folks to, Michael and Mike, to let people know about your websites, about some of the things that you do, some of the books and so forth that you're producing. So I will leave the next 2 minutes to you.
Want to take the first minute, Michael?
All right. I would recommend that listeners look at the website Freedom Advocates. I think it's been a website designed for giving citizens real information about Agenda 21 and taking a philosophical perspective while evaluating that. There's a lot to learn there. Site was badly hacked a couple of years ago. We've just about got it fixed up again. And you'll find lots of information that will be of great assistance. Secondly, we have a site called Globalization of California, which deals with the COGs in California and has a conference. We held a day-long conference a year ago in the Bay Area describing the plan, One Bay Area. Speakers like Pat Wood, Debbie Bacigalupi, Rosa Corey, myself, some local politicians who are opposed to One Bay Area. And it's about a six-hour conference and all on video, nominal cost, and that can be very, very helpful to you. We also have a lawsuit filed against ABAG, and the study of that lawsuit is exposed in the same lawsuit. And so I invite listeners to go to globalizationofcalifornia.com to get that information.
Good. Thank you. Mike, can you talk about some of your
your website? We're revamping our website called AmericaPlunder.com, AmericaPlunder.com. And in it we're featuring two books primarily, Plundered, which goes into the background of what we've been talking about here tonight, as well as some of the ins and outs of what's going on today and why we're having such trouble, as well as a new book on Islam. It's a small book. It's designed to read very quickly,
bring you up to speed and so forth. We're currently writing another one right now. It'll probably be out in about 6 months. And hopefully that will help people understand that everything we talked about a year and a half ago when we wrote this book is happening right now. And it was very predictive as far, well, it doesn't take much to predict what they're going to do. I guess I shouldn't be taking too much kudos for that. They're pretty predictable. And we have a whole series of articles and other sundry things that you can probably really learn quite a bit from. So I would strongly suggest if you want to learn more about what we've been talking about is to go to AmericaPlanet.com and start looking at some of the op-eds and videos and so forth that we have.
Okay, good. Kelby, with that said, I'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in to tonight's show, and please tune in next week. We will have a new series of guests on, and we will connect the dots.
It was 1776 when the founders signed the writ of independence from the Brit. It was revolution. Now an enemy from within would enslave us all again and deprive us of our rights in the Constitution. Restore the Republic.